그지 엠마들야네 지금도 뉘남치 치와 미다바스도 삼다데도 진네 삼다데 치위갑라 아네 에 펜바디네 최리마도 셰페요 마스 최리 핑교레세지 니게와 주고레스 제다 미다바 곰 디네 삼다지 아니 남시게 세바이나 난 에 다 신나 아니 게와 민두 샘피게신 셰나메바시 디리그레스 Then he lived in a then digores. On the niche, and then you are down to send a metabocum to send a Yemenji or as a dish.
So, good evening. So, we've been looking previously on this presentation on the impermanence of life, so or death, which is impermanence. So, here we're talking last time about. Let me just move this about thinking about the benefits of this meditation on impermanence. And so amongst the benefits, thinking about death, so the purpose of thinking about impermanence and thinking about the impermanence of our life in particular is that we will come to see that actually at the time of death, the only thing that benefits us is the Dharma. And therefore, we need to spend whatever remains of this life in engage in virtuous activities accruing merit. And then, when the time of our death does come, then we will be able to die without fear about our future lives. We'll be able to die in a peaceful state.
Mm-hmm.
So last time we went as far as the quotation from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we now come to the quotation from Dakpo Rinpoche, which is near the top of page
56. Dangbo samlo ji kanish kugure sebaina ane pe shawale pe de penesimje shawachik juje ane ngonduge ko ju pa nya ju shawaina pe ko pe ngamra chik shi uyoro da ki di thagi na sambe jenaro shoro da ane dene gi ju jene pa laban pa shawaina ane ko kanis pe shoro ji gyuro da ngamra shi gyuro jesa dene gi ngamra shi ne thaya gi denda lya ane
Here, Dakpo Rinpoche, he first starts to talk through analogy. So he talks about the purpose of meditating on death and impermanence can be likened to a deer that has been caught in a snare. So if a deer is entrapped in that way, it's of course going to be experiencing tremendous fear and anxiety. And if someone comes and releases the deer from that snare, of course it's going to bolt away and run without looking back. So similarly, if we come to if we meditate well and effectively on impermanence, and we come to understand how all impermanent phenomena change momentarily, and we will come to see how at the time of our death is uncertain. It can happen at any time because of this momentary change. We will, in the same way as this deer would proceed at great or escape at great speed and not look back, likewise we would engage in accumulation of virtue with great enthusiasm and great commitment. So this is really specifically referring to our motivation. So when at the initial stage are generating this very strong and powerful motivation. And with the, having generated this strong, powerful and sustained motivation, then whenever we have an opportunity to accrue virtue, we will do so. And in fact, this will become a dominant activity for us. So in other words, when we've generated this strong and sustained powerful motivation, whatever we do, we will do in a manner that accrues virtue. So having generated this strong and powerful motivation, then we come to the middle stage of our practice. So whilst we've been acting for a while under this this powerful and consistent motivation, then we can be likened to a farmer who has sown his crop well, and the harvest has gone well, and now, or not the harvested, anyway, the growing of the crop has gone well, and now it's the crop is looking fabulous, and the farmer will look back pleased with himself, saying, I've done well here, the crop is looking fantastic. So similarly, a practitioner who has been engaging under the sway of this powerful and sustained virtuous motivation, when the time of death comes, they will have no fear, because they know that they have used their life very well. They've accumulated virtue very effectively. They've purified a lot of non-virtue. And now they do not, now that the time of death has come, the time of taking a new body, a new life is about to arrive, they have nothing to fear. They don't need to fear falling to the lower realms, because this life has been used so well.
So
So having acted now for a lengthy period under the sway of this strong, powerful, virtuous motivation, then when we come to the end, so we've had the beginning, the middle, and now the end, then the practitioner would look back at this huge amount of virtue that they've accumulated, and they would be pretty pleased. So this can be likened to a project, a work project that we have in our life, that we've maybe put in a lot of energy, a lot of planning, a lot of preparation, and then a lot of energy in the execution of this task, and then it turns out well. Then we sit back quite pleased with ourselves that something that we believed in and put a lot of energy into had turned out so well. So similarly, this practitioner will look back and say, through this motivation they've generated, they've been able to accrue a lot of virtue, really made, have some success in purifying these negative minds and this negative habitual way of thinking, and in its place have generated positive habitual thoughts or habitual thought patterns. So to put that another way, they've accumulated a lot of virtue and they've purified a lot of afflictions. The afflictions have become very weak and the virtuous minds have become very powerful. So this means this person no longer fears suffering because their virtuous minds are so powerful and dominant, and their afflictive minds are, and their afflictive habitual minds are now so much weaker, they actually don't fear suffering. So this, these results, in particular this last one of not fearing suffering, means that this all comes about through having having meditated for over a sustained period on impermanence and momentary change. So just something I missed earlier. So the person who doesn't fear suffering, what this means is that such a person knows, they have the confidence that whatever they encounter, they will be able to deal with. Why? Because of the strength of their virtuous minds. So we, as ordinary people, we do fear situations. But a person who has developed their virtuous mind so well and purified their afflictive habitual thoughts, habitual thought patterns, they do not fear suffering situations because they know they have the strength of mind to not be overcome by suffering. So we speak a lot about, so that was from before, now from now. So we speak a lot about happiness and needing to accumulate the causes for happiness. So what are these causes for happiness? So in brief, in one word, this is virtue, accumulating virtue. So through accumulating virtue, we're accumulating the causes for happiness. So here we can talk about, for example, the six practices of generosity, etc. So when we think about those, so through engaging in the act of generosity, on the one hand, we accumulate virtue. And then in conjunction with this practice of generosity, the contrary mind, that gets weakened, that gets purified. So the mind of miserliness, the selfish mind of miserliness, that's really thinking only about oneself and not about the other, that mind weakens, and it's the habitual self-grasping, self-cherishing gets weaker and weaker as this mind of generosity grows stronger and stronger. Then likewise with the second practice of ethical conduct. So as our ethical conduct gets better, then all the virtuous acts as we engage in virtuous acts guarding our ethical conduct, such as practicing the 10 virtues, then all our the 10 non-virtues, those that afflictive way of thinking, that gets weaker and weaker and weaker. So as we engage in honest speech, and we consistently speak in an honest way, in a non-divisive way, but rather a harmonious way, then the contrary minds of lying and bringing disharmony to groups and to people, that those minds weaken. So the virtuous minds strengthen, the contrary minds, they weaken. And likewise, as we purify as we start to develop the mind of non-harmfulness, then the contrary mind, the mind of harmfulness, which of course leads to acts like killing, that mind gets purified, it gets and weakened, and the virtuous mind of non-harmfulness, this virtuous mental factor, this strengthens. So we see this relationship of, as on the one hand we have the virtuous mind growing in strength, the non-virtuous mind and the non-virtuous habitual way of thinking gets weaker and weaker. Then likewise we can move on to the mind of patience. So this practice of patience, in particular being mentally at ease, mentally calm in situations of conflict. So not just being quiet, but actually having a peaceful mind. So here, minds like anger, minds like pride, these are weakened as our patience strengthens. And then likewise with the mind of joyous perseverance. As we apply this mind of joyous perseverance, this taking delight in engaging in virtue, as this delight in engaging in virtue, that mind strengthens, then the mind of laziness, that weakens. And it starts to become that we have more difficulty stopping engaging in virtue than we do now in terms of engaging in virtue. And then likewise, as our concentration develops and our mind becomes slowly habituated with single points of concentration, then this distracted mind that we have, that starts to weaken. So this habitual distraction, that mind starts to be tamed as our concentration strengthens. And then lastly, with the practice of wisdom. So we saw this, we looked at this in detail previously in the Heart Sutra teachings. So here, as we come to understand, for example, dependent arising, how everything arises due to causes and conditions and parts and the like, and nothing exists intrinsically, as we start to gain familiarity with that way of thinking, of course we're accumulating a virtue, and we're strengthening this positive habitual way of thinking, then the habitual way of thinking on the negative side, in other words, self-grasping itself, that weakens. So here we see, in terms of, to go back to the beginning, because this was long, to go back to the beginning, the cause for happiness is virtue. What is virtue? It's accumulating these, or strengthening these habitual ways of, positive habitual ways of thinking, and weakening these negative habitual ways of thinking.
So
So when we hear about accomplishing the causes of happiness, accomplishing virtue, we should immediately call to mind engaging in the 10 virtuous actions, engaging in these 6 practices of generosity, ethical conduct, etc. Because these are the causes for generating happiness. When we don't need to really think about other forms, this is the key practice, engaging in the 10 virtuous actions, engaging in the 6 practices of generosity, etc.
Oh, that is midabekor, nchiwa midabada, midabekor, yane, yando, samdang, kumba, yina, nne sanjele yo chobu puwari esti, choban, sanjele chobu puwari esti, sanje tamjele, sanje jigma inba, sanje chazanle yo chobu puwari esti orta.
So now we move on to the quote from the Buddha. So reflecting on this momentary change and reflecting on it repeatedly, this is like making an offering to all the Buddhas.
Now the chobu pu se dil chobu pu ye dil ya an san sing chu ba se na ne ka so de du be chu ba se ni yong de du be chu ba du ba
du be chu ba
du be chu ba san sing chu ba du be chu ba se
de di chu ba de ba
e ji ka ga de de ne ang de si jiao san sing chu ba dong du be chu ba se ni yo de san sing chu ba se de ang zu xin duo da sa ya dong ya da du luo de de su pu ye de la san sing chu ba se bo de du be chu ba se de
So in this line, it refers to meditate persistently on impermanence is to make offerings to all the Buddhas. So this refers to, so there are different kinds of offering. So the one kind is material offerings, so offering clothing, food, this kind of thing. But here we specifically talk about the offering of our practice, offering of our virtue. So here it's specifically talking about the practice that we engage in and offering this to all the Buddhas.
Mm. ne Pombuti Tunigua, Kagurua, Dinaja Sanjelia, Dinigi Puene, Sanje Tunigorua, and the Tunigor, Dipuedi, Manjugi, Susi Devajin Puorua, and Susi Kiawasagore.
So, in terms of if we are able to make offerings, so for example, if we make offerings to the Buddhas and we can offer them food, we can offer clothing or whatever, so this is all very good to do. But, well, Buddhas and the like, they don't really need clothing and food. But so what they really want is to see us develop ourselves, to see us progress towards our own enlightenment, because that is their goal. Their goal is not, they didn't become Buddhas so that they can receive offerings of nice food and nice clothing. They became Buddhas, so that suffering sentient beings can finally progress towards enlightenment. So the very best offering to them, the offering that would please them most, is offering our practice, because it's through offering our practice, or it's through engaging in practice, that we are progressing towards enlightenment, that we are helping the Buddhas fulfill their goals. So therefore, offering our practice to the Buddhas is the supreme offering, because this is the offering that makes them happiest, in that it helps us, because we are following their teachings, following their advice, we are achieving their heart aspiration. We are coming closer and closer to our own liberation and full enlightenment. And moreover, if we say take on a worldly context, if we give a gift to someone, and maybe someone we work with and the like, our boss at work or whomever, we tend to form a closer relationship with someone. We bond with them. We strengthen a friendship with someone if we give them a gift. Likewise, by making offerings to the Buddhas, we strengthen our connection with the Buddhas. And this is whatever one offers to the Buddhas, one strengthens that connection and our relationship with the Buddhas. And so then if amongst the various types of offering, if the best is to offer our practice, then this is what we should engage in and offer to the Buddhas.
Mm.
So the parents here will know that as much as we may wish otherwise, our kids don't always behave so well. They don't always want to study wholeheartedly. And this is, I suppose, the sad truth. And from this, of course, parents have many worries, and they worry for their children, and that the children will turn out well and will become educated, will become conducive members of society, will have good behavior and be good people. But kids often are like this, but not always. So through this, unfortunately, parents do have many worries. But if the kids were to, if our children were to change their behavior, and were to start studying well, and to behave well, and to help the parents, and to fulfill the hopes that the parents have for them, of course the parents would be particularly happy if the kids were to do this and do it consistently. So likewise, if we are the children, sometimes a little naughty, and sometimes not fulfilling the hopes of the, in this case, our parents or the Buddhas, then if we were to turn away from this, and rather wholeheartedly embrace our spiritual practice and engage in virtue and offer this virtue to the Buddhas, this is really making the supreme offering to the Buddhas, because this is their heart desire, their innermost wish, that we engage in virtuous activities so as to become a Buddha for the sake of other sentient beings. Because that is their goal, that is their innermost wish, that we stop creating the causes that lead to our own suffering. That we rather create the causes that lead to our own happiness and develop our own abilities to bring happiness to others and to bring lasting benefit to others. So through accumulating these causes, through turning away from non-virtue, to embracing the paths of happiness, and then taking this and offering to the Buddhas, is really the supreme offering. And this is the offering that really fulfills the Buddha's innermost wishes and brings them the greatest of delight.
Mm.
So for beginners like us, actually this subject or this topic of impermanence is supremely important. It can be, it should be called the most important meditation topic. And from this this engagement in the subject of impermanence, actually we accumulate huge merit. And really for us as beginners, this should be our primary object of meditation.
And
So through this practice of impermanence, we'll come to really appreciate the preciousness of this opportunity, but see just how indefinite this lifespan is. We'll have the strength of mind to engage in practice wholeheartedly, turn away from non-virtue, accumulate virtue really in a very concentrated and powerful manner. And through this, then our practice of wanting to develop meditative equipoise will come about so much more successfully. And once we've developed meditative equipoise and we're generating paths and we're really moving forward in our spiritual practice, then the Buddhists will actually be in a position where they are now able to make a prediction to us in terms of when we ourselves will attain our own enlightenment. So being able to receive a prediction from the Buddhas in terms of when we too will join them and be enlightened, that stems from the meditation on impermanence. So through developing this mind of concentration, this powerful single point of mind, we will then be able to develop this very powerful mind of bodhicitta and do it in a way that it becomes uncontrived. So in other words, it's stable, it doesn't need to be regenerated. And at that point, we enter the great level, the path of accumulation, the paths of the bodhisattvas. And that's when our practice of generosity and ethical conduct now progresses, and we're now engaging in the practices of the six perfections. So as we then progress through the path of accumulation from the great level to the middle, So we first attain the small level of path of accumulation. And so when we attain the small level of path of accumulation, that's when we've entered the path of the bodhisattvas. And then as we develop our merit through the practice of the perfections, generosity, ethical conduct, etc., we then start to progress through the path, from the small level of the path of accumulation to the middle level, and then eventually to the great level of the path of accumulation. Once we've attained this great level, the third of the three levels of the path of accumulation, then we can see the Buddhas directly, and we can talk to them directly. And so at that point, that we will receive a prophecy from the Buddha in terms of when we ourselves will become enlightened as well. And as well as being able to converse directly with the Buddhas, we will, by that stage, through this meditative stabilization, we will have developed some of these superpowers, these super knowledges, anyway, I'm not sure, maybe superpowers. So we'll be able to hear from extensive distances. We will be able to travel anywhere in the world in no time at all. and we will also be able to see far, far distances. So all of this comes about through starting out now from where we are with the power of the consistent meditation on impermanence. Because it's through this meditation on impermanence that we develop the strength of mind to start to achieve these fantastic Dharma results. So right at the very bottom of page 56, there's something from the Vinaya, a quote from the Vinaya here. So here, Lord Buddha says that, of course, it's to make offerings is a very virtuous act, and we encourage to do this. And if we make offerings to a very virtuous field, such as the Buddha's supreme students, such as Shariputra and Magdalayana, then of course the virtue that we would accumulate is fantastic. However, if we generate the mind of bodhicitta and we meditate on impermanence, then through such meditations, actually, we accrue far more virtue than making offerings to even holy beings, such as Shariputra, Magdalayana, and many other of Buddha's great disciples. So again, this is as presented here by the Buddha himself as an exhortation for us to meditate again and again on impermanence. So we see here the time of Geshe Potowa, a non-ordained student asked him amongst all the variety of Dharma practices, if he is to engage in just one, which Dharma practice should he engage in? Which is the very best practice for him to engage in? So the reason that so here we'll see many reasons given why impermanence is such a crucial meditation and a practice for us to cultivate, and why Geshe Potowa said amongst the vast number of meditation objects, this is supreme. So the first reason that's given is that at the beginning, so for us beginners, the meditation on impermanence is the doorway for engaging in the Dharma. So why is meditation on impermanence the doorway for engaging in the Dharma? So we tend to, our mind tends to be really often quite preoccupied with our own problems and our difficulties in our life. If we've thought about impermanence and we're meditating on impermanence, we will apply this meditation on impermanence to our problems and our difficulties, and we will start to see our problems and difficulties in a very different way through our understanding of impermanence. So therefore, we will be engaging in the practice of Dharma through the application of impermanence to what dominates our minds, our own problems, our needs, our desires, all these mental sufferings that we have. If we engage in this meditation on impermanence in a consistent manner, we will apply that to whatever dominates our mind, and this tends to be our problems. So therefore, we will be engaging in Dharma practice through this initial step of meditating on impermanence. Then furthermore, as this meditation becomes more and more profound and deep-seated within us, we will start to see the need to engage in virtue, and to engage in virtue immediately and in a sustained manner and in a powerful manner. And so in this way, in the middle, the meditation on impermanence will drive our accumulation of virtue. It will give us the power and the strength to engage in virtue and engage in virtue consistently. And then as we're engaging in virtue through the acts of generosity, ethical conduct, patience, joyous perseverance, concentration and the like, we will then move on to the sixth one, that of wisdom. So here, this is mentioned here as the end. So it's again through this understanding of impermanence on how everything changes momentarily, how all impermanent phenomena change momentarily, how everything is a dependent arising, that this meditation on impermanence itself that we've been cultivating from the beginning, now that when we come to the end, this helps us with the realization of emptiness. So it's for these reasons, for the realization of emptiness at the end, the accruing of virtue in the middle, and the doorway to engaging in spiritual practice at the beginning, that Geshe Potowa said to his students, that this is the crucial meditation, the supreme meditation that you should engage in. So furthermore, or another way to look at this, through this meditation on impermanence at the beginning, so for the as beginner practitioners, through meditating on impermanence, the way that we relate to our life, to our everyday experiences, to our goals, to our priorities, this is going to change completely. It will be turned on its head, because right now what dominates us is thinking about happiness in this life. It's thinking about eliminating the problems of this life and achieving the happiness in this life. Being trying to be happy in the next moment, trying not to experience suffering in the next moment, the next day, the next week, the next month. This is what dominates our mind, dominates our activity right now. So meditating on impermanence, we will come to change this way of thinking, and we'll cut the grasping at this life, and rather our activities, in particular our mental activity and the resulting speech and physical activity, will be geared to our future lives, and will be geared to to making sure we attain good rebirths in the future, and be geared towards ensuring our future lives go well. And then, so that would be at the beginning. And as we cultivate this this meditation on impermanence further and further, we will actually come to see that it's not just we don't just need to attain the small scope goal of a good future rebirth. The whole of samsara, wherever one is born, one suffers. All of samsara is pervaded by suffering. There is no essence to samsara. And so therefore, in this, the middle part of our practice, the strong wish for liberation, to be freed from this great ocean of suffering, this will arise in us in a very strong and powerful manner. This wish to be liberated, to definitely emerge from suffering, wherever it is found in samsara, will arise. And then again, as this meditation on impermanence goes stronger and more deeply into our consciousness and pervades our other meditations even more so, we will then be heading on towards the path for attaining the state of liberation, or the ultimate liberation. So all of this comes about in the attainment through the meditation on impermanence, the attainment of the final goal of liberation at the end, and in the middle, the wish for to definitely emerge from the suffering state of samsara, seeing how samsara has absolutely no essence, but is pervaded by suffering. And in the short term, right now at the beginning, it will turn our way of thinking to thinking away from this benefit of and happiness of this life to thinking about our future lives. So here we're seeing from Geshe Potapa these variety of qualities that come about independent on this meditation. So through this meditation on impermanence, right now at the beginning, the entry stage or the beginning stage, here our faith in the Dharma will grow. So the faith that we have will be that much more stronger. And then through having this strong and powerful faith that has now come from experience, so not just a blind faith or a faith from imprints, but a faith that's based now on experience, then we come to the middle stage, and that's with this powerful faith in the Dharma, we will have great joyous perseverance. We will want to engage in virtue. We will wholeheartedly engage in our Dharma practice and in our beneficial activities for others. That is what will bring us most joy. So our own studies, our own meditation, and our virtuous activities for others, all of this will bring us the greatest joy because of this powerful, this joyous mind of joyous perseverance. And then at the end, through this merit that we've accumulated, then our wisdom will be that much more powerful, and our understanding of emptiness will lead us to eventually actually realizing emptiness itself. So to make an analogy here, so if something that we eat and we eat quite regularly and we probably take great enjoyment in it, if we hear from others or we read in some literature or we watch a documentary on TV and we see actually our diet is unhealthy, this unhealthy diet is actually what's causing my physical ailments, and it's actually this unhealthy diet is going to lead to far greater problems in the future. When we see this and we think about it and we hear from many sources that we consider valid, what we of course will change our behavior and we will stop eating these kinds of food, even though we think that they're making us happy. But because we see now actually the reason that our health isn't so good is because our diet is poor, then we'll actually make efforts and we'll search out healthy food and we'll only want to eat nutritious food and we'll make sure that we only eat nutritious food. So this is very similar. When we come to understand, when we engage with this meditation on impermanence, this is something we really need to do now, because this is the entry point to the whole Dharma path. So when through meditating on impermanence, we will first reflect on the various points we've had here. So we see about the certainty of death, and we will use all these various meditations we've had before, or the points of meditation we had before, to show us again and again how our death is certain. So beyond this more conceptual level to an actual experiential level of yes, my death is certain, and then moving on to this uncertainty of the time of death and seeing how even our good health now is no certainty, that we are not actually ill inside but we don't know this, or that we are right now we are still at a fairly young age and therefore we have many years. This is not true. We cannot say this with certainty because many people our age and younger have died, etc. So through using these reflections, we will see that not only is death certain, but our time of death is incredibly uncertain. It could just be a breath away, a day away, a week away. We have no way of knowing this. And then the next thought that will come after this is we need a method, we need something to do. And that has been presented here many times about the need to accumulate virtue and how to accumulate virtue. So what accumulating virtue means, of course, is developing and strengthening these positive habitual ways of thinking. So our mind is growing as a more habitually in a positive way of thinking. So we start to relate to the world in a different way. We start to relate to our experiences and what we encounter in a different way. And this negative way, negative habitual minds, these weaken. The positive habitual minds strengthen. And then through this, it means our virtuous minds are more dominant. Our afflictive minds are become rarer and rarer. So what does this mean? We are actually happier. We have far less problems. So all of this comes about through the meditation on impermanence. And this meditation is something that now we know how to do. We have the skill to do it. And through doing this, seeing how our problems, we have far fewer problems, we are so much happier. What happens? Our faith in the Dharma is that much stronger. And this faith, again, it doesn't just come from the writing of imprints. This is now experiential faith, and that is so much more powerful. So that's a more detailed explanation of what we just had presented.
Then semje oda sozo shi dur da dit dibe ji yo mare sem bi di semje so ye dibe ji adi nu dur wa di samle me wa za di ji go re jere.
So of course in this life we all do engage in non-virtue, and we engage in non-virtuous activities. And some people really engage in quite very coarse or very harsh non-virtues. So, for example, killing. So people who either kill animals, like butchers and the like, or those who fish and engage in so-called sport to and kill animals in this way, or maybe soldiers who kill human beings like this. So all of them will almost certainly see the result of their acts. They will see that a life is being taken. They will see that the fish or the animal they're butchering is dying, is now dead. So this they see clearly. It's not something there's any doubt or confusion about. The problem is they don't then think about their own death. They see the death of others and they don't apply this to themselves. And not applying this understanding of impermanence of life to themselves, this, due to this fault, they continue to engage in this non-virtue. And through continuing engaging in these non-virtue, they continue to accumulate these very powerful causes for future suffering. And even if they were engaging in this killing, and they were seeing this killing, if they were to stop that next step, stop that next faulty step, and say and apply this death that they're seeing before them to themselves, they're almost certainly thinking about the results of killing. They would want to change their behavior. So this is a great fault.
Then
So if we find ourselves not thinking about our future lives and not thinking about the suffering that we may well encounter in our future lives and the problems that we may encounter in our future lives, if we don't think about these things, we're not going to stop engaging in non-virtue. Because if we're only thinking about ourselves and our immediate pleasures and our immediate wants and desires, we're not thinking about the karmic results of our acts. We're not thinking about our future lives. Whereas if someone someone engages in non-virtue, so we'll use the same analogy as before, when someone is killing another being, they can see the fear in that being's eyes. And they can, and it's not a big step forward to think, how would I feel if someone stood over me with a knife, was going to chop off my head, was going to chop off a limb, and was then going to skin me, etc. If the person were to think in this way, then maybe some doubt would arise in their mind about what they're actually doing. Not thinking this way, they will of course just continue. But if they were to think about, actually, if this were to happen to me, then some fear would arise in them. And they would start to think about, actually, is this really what I should be doing? So likewise with ourselves and our own non-virtuous actions, we need to think about them in the context of the karmic results that we will experience in future lives. Because we now we know about the karmic results that do come from non-virtue. We've also now heard about a method that can be applied, and that is the practice of the Dhamma, the cultivation of positive minds, and the making these positive minds habitual. So if we move away from this thinking about one's own problems and one's own difficulties, and thinking about not just this life, but future lives, then we will change how we behave in this life, and we'll turn away from non-virtue in this life. So, again, with this in meditation on impermanence, if we thought about impermanence really repeatedly, and so in a way that it's really, as we've seen in previous pages, how it really dominates our mind, then when this has arisen, we will be able to purify with ease, and we'll be able to purify significant amounts because of the strength of the mind. Likewise, when we have the opportunity to engage in virtue, again, this is something we'll be able to do easily, and we will be able to accumulate so much more virtue from the same act because of the strength of the mind. So again, this meditation on impermanence leads to an easy and a powerful engagement in both purification and accumulation of virtue. So through our meditation on impermanence, again when it's becoming quite strong and powerful, then we'll have this very powerful virtuous mind, and we start to move our object of meditation to that of the situation of sentient beings. We will start to see how all sentient beings like us only want to experience happiness. No sentient being wants to experience even the slightest suffering, not even for a short period. All of us, we only want the same. We want to experience only happiness. And then through thinking this way, we will also want all sentient beings to only experience happiness. We will have the strong innermost wish for sentient beings to be free from all forms of suffering. So in this way, the minds of love, the minds of compassion, they will start to arise in us, and they'll start to become powerful in us. And then, as these minds arise and become more and more and more powerful in us, then our wish to benefit others will arise in a very powerful and stable manner. And from this mind, our ability to engage in others will be, in a sense, effortless. We will really want to engage in beneficial activities for others, because we will want them to be happy. We will want them to be free of suffering, and we will want to bring this state about.
So
the position we find ourselves in right now is we have very little endurance when we meet situations we don't want, situations we find unpleasant. So when we meet the unwanted. And if we take something small like watching a TV program or a film that the other people we're with want to watch, but we really don't enjoy it, it's not our kind of show, that hour can really take a long time. And we can be sitting there a little bit fed up. And this is just shows how you could say immature or childish our mind is, and how little strength we have in dealing with really very small and temporary problems. However, if we've come to understand impermanence well, then what's a few minutes, what's half an hour, what's an hour? It's really not a big deal at all. And if we've then taken this further and we thought about actually the people that we care about, those that we're sitting with, they derive in great pleasure, suddenly our experience is transformed. And this comes about from first thinking about impermanence and really coming to understand impermanence in a way that it starts to impact on how we relate to what we encounter. So similarly, if right now the minds of love and compassion, we have them sometimes, but they're not very powerful and they're not very stable. They come and they go, and like this. And because these minds are not very powerful and they're certainly not stable, we have very little endurance for engaging in acts that are beneficial for others and only for others. So in other words, helping others in a way that actually we don't get anything from. This can be difficult, especially to do with a good heart and in a sustained manner. However, once we have actually developed this understanding of impermanence and then developed the minds of love and compassion, then it's a very different story. Then we're not thinking about our own needs anymore. We're not grasping at this life and this life's benefits and what I want from today and this next hour and the like. We're thinking now about our future lives and our future merit and helping all sentient beings attain the fantastic goal of liberation from suffering and attaining the state of omniscience. And when we have this, and this is these goals that have come about through thinking about impermanence, and which has led us to stop grasping at the happiness of this life but going so much further, we will be able to give rise to the minds of love and compassion. And when we have these minds of love and compassion, then helping others is really something very easy. It's something very joyous. And whenever we have the opportunity, we'll joyfully engage in helping others. It will never be a burden. It will never be too much. So once we've generated this strong and powerful understanding of impermanence, and we've applied it to the minds of love and kindness, so we have this powerful understanding of impermanence, we're generating minds of love and kindness, then the mind of understanding emptiness, this will come about so much more easily.
And 确实比给你们这边给的地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地区地
So there's a quote from Jetson Milarepa, who explains or accounts how he relates to what he sees in the world around him. So when he sees displays of people who have great wealth or great power or very impressive looking and beautiful and the like, he says how his mind, we're at the bottom of page 58, he says how his mind is not swayed by that, because he has this understanding of impermanence, that when these people that have great physical beauty or this impressive presence or great wealth or power and prestige, when they die, this will not be of any help to them. This is not something they can take to their future lives. Rather, in they're trying to attain these or accrue these things in this life, they almost certainly engage in a lot of negativity. And that is what they will take to the next life, these negative imprints. And that will only lead to suffering in the future for them. So on the one hand, when he sees these impressive worldly displays, his mind isn't impressed with it. His mind isn't, he doesn't have attachment arise. And that is because of his understanding of impermanence. And furthermore, when he understands the suffering that will come for these people in the future, the minds of compassion arise in him. And likewise, when he sees worldly goods, so like a very nice house and this kind of thing, again, attachment doesn't arise in him, because he knows this is impermanent. And whatever someone has, whatever worldly goods someone has, these are disintegrating moment by moment. They're changing moment by moment. So there's no essence there to grasp at or to long for. So this understanding has come about independent on his meditation on impermanence. And so because of this understanding that has arisen due to impermanence, his mind is no longer dominated by the afflictions, because he's not being impressed by the world, by samsaric displays, samsaric goods and the like, the joys of samsara, the pleasures of samsara. Rather, when he sees this, he remembers impermanence, and this leads to a generation of love and compassion within him. So now he says to you, my students, this, what I'm sharing with you, is my supreme practice. I have no better advice to give you than this. So this is my Dharma practice. This, my realizations have come from this. You, as my students, please engage in this same practice.
Mm. Andare yunjian dine yore se mangpo shu saare. Cheta mitabha gomyo du, ta mitabha giti ina du samtang, ta mitabha yane yang du samtang, dine mitabha ane giti ina du sere du ne, ote tenpo yoma ta kichik chikpa re, sempeke samlop ta. Ya jing, ya nyi se du ne lam sang, ota di kichik chikpa re, ta mitabha re, sempeke samlop kaya ta. Andu se na kanto, ya jik gomro jab che, ta jik gomra jab, ya jik tongpa nyi kwa samla ta. तो तोंबा ये सम दान दे दिने यहाँ दी सम ले पार जी न्यामजा गम दिले सु दान दे दो वो दादी मिटा पड़े था ससुर की दी चिंगे भाई उमा दास
दी थमा थमा
गम
गम क्या बोलते
हैं गम जब जब गम चुले दाया दाया योरवा गम ले सु दाया योरवा था गम जमजा योरवा गम जब ने दाया लांग जुआ योरवा दिने जो दे कब ला दिने यहाँ ओ दे मिटा पड़े मिटा पे सम खोल उन दो चिंता दिने मिटा पड़े सम ले यहाँ ने यहाँ दो सम खोल तो कुन्दे दे मिटा पड़े अंजु गुंबे के दा जेबो रोची मिंगो मिंगो जेबो रो जुगो आलेस दा जुगो आलेस
So we've for some weeks now we've been looking at this practice on the impermanence of life, and we've spoken about really the many benefits of engaging in this practice. So this is really something that we need to cultivate in a both a formal and an informal manner. So whenever we get the opportunity, we need to recall impermanence to our mind. And we spoke about this a lot in our last class as well. Whatever we encountering, whatever we're doing, to try and have this mind present. So whatever we're doing in the day, to try and have this awareness of impermanence. When you have a few minutes, during the day generate this mind of impermanence. It only takes a moment to do that. When we lie down at night to go to sleep, recall impermanence. When we meditate, say, on emptiness or whatever our meditation object is, remember that this meditation itself is impermanent. It too will end. So really, with whatever we're engaging in, try and do it with this understanding of impermanence, because in this way, the realization will come about and in a stable manner. So this presentation we've had here on the impermanence of life, we've seen here how this, we have been exhorted, us as beginner practitioners, we've been exhorted to practice in the same way that the holy beings of the past have practiced. And they all use this meditation on impermanence at the beginning, the middle, and the end of their practice. So all the great and holy beings of the past and the present, they engage in this this meditation, and through the results and the results that came from cultivating this meditation, they too attained the paths of the bodhisattvas. They too have attained the state of Buddhahood themselves. So therefore, we should really try and do like they've done, like they're requesting us to do, and engage in this meditation and cultivate it again and again and again. Because we've seen through these many weeks of this presentation, this very detailed presentation that we've had, we've seen so many methods in terms of how we can apply this this meditation, this understanding of impermanence. And if you do it again and again, both in formal sitting manner as well as an informal manner, whenever we can take some time or whatever activities we're engaging in, then this understanding will start to arise in our mind. And it will start to impact on the way that we think and we relate to the world, and thereby our behavior will start to change. So until this, we've achieved these final goals of the Dharma path, we need to accumulate, we need to cultivate this mind of impermanence. Then whatever virtue that we generate from our meditation on impermanence, from receiving these teachings on impermanence and the like, this is something we should really dedicate to for ourselves and for all sentient beings who are suffering, to attain the state of Buddhahood, this peerless state of freedom from all forms of suffering, this peerless state where the highest form of happiness has been attained. So whatever we virtue accumulate, both through these teachings now and through our ongoing meditations on impermanence, we should dedicate in this way.
Kajile mitaba komba chiwa mitaba kom, dine mitaba kiji kiji chiba du, mitaba samtamba na dige ne, chulia, debaki, kuchigre, ne, kehadu, kuchigre, dine diba panga, kanga, yomares, dine sonsa, de soma in zata, and you get that, nine answer to the land, chiwa mitaba samta, dine ya chik, shuhel masdang, and nije nimetila samtava ina, shuhel yala, nise adena, dine what, That ແມ່ມີເກວ່າຈຸດຈິກິເມສັນເບສາມນະຈິກເຈອັນດາດາມີມາຈະບັນຈາເດປານເດດັງງາຈຸດັງຍາມເນນນາເລມິລຍາຈິມບາຕາຍາດາອັນຊໍຊືເກຊຸດິມຊ້ອຍາດາເນຊໍບໍຄົມຍາອັນດາຈິກເພາສໍໂຕດິລຍາກະເດອັນມີມົງໂກທູວັນຈາຍໍລະມົງບູຄົນລາຍໍຊິກໂຕວ່າດິເນດາດາດິເນງຍິຊໍບໍຄົມຍາດິຊໍບໍຄັງທູດໍຄົມກີເສບຍາຊໍບໍສໍມຕາດິເນອັນຍາຈິກເກຕິຊືຕິຊືລະເດນະເກວ່າ
တူရတဲ့နေ့ချင်းမင်းတရားတာဆိုဆိုကေချောကရုနဲ့ဇွန်ဂျီဇွန်ဂျီချင်းစံပြေဒုစဇွန်ဂျီချင်းနဲ့ကေဝတ်ဂူရင်စံပြေဆမ်လို့ဒုစတာဒီနေ့ကဗျော်လျာနဲ့ချင်းကတော့ဒီနေ့စံဂျီတာဂျန်ရှုစံနဲ့ဒီနေ့ကိုကွန်ပျူတာစံပါမယောဟာရှိဒီစရဒီစေချီဒုစနဲ့ဂျန်ရှုစံနာဆမ်တာအဲ့ဒီမိတာဘာကိုဂျီဘူရာဆမ်တာဒုချင်းတင်းရင်လျာတဲ့စံပါရှာဒီနေ့
ဘုရားကဒီစဒူစေနာကြည့်ကြတာအဲလောက်ချောင်းချေစံညမ်လင်းချေစနာဒူစဒူစကြီးရတယ်တာဒီကြဲတဲ့ငါတို့ဒူစကြီးရတယ်လောက်လဲတော့တောက်ဟောတဲ့ဒီရဲအင်းစားတောင်ကြည့်တဲ့ဒူစတဲ့မောင်ရမပါပေကတောက်ပေကတဲ့ဒဲဆဲဆဲဆဲကဒီနာတဲ့ဆဲဆဲချေနာညမ်ချေချေညေချေဆုံးချေဒူချေတဲ့နဲ့ဒါညမ်ရဲသာရဲချေပါနဲ့ဒါဝချီလဲသာဆုံးချေချရောကွာ
だ、だ、にめちれさらしい表現に人間がだとさ、そのじゃべね、てんさらぐじゃまりぐろあったわちして。でね、ちょっとどこまままさ、でね、にばちゃちゃちゃ、どうろわ。てんさんがとどうすんやめんじゃやけ。どせだ、なぞちゃさん。じょろ、な、じょろ、なぞちゃさん、じばちこれ。てんさんとちゃさん、じばちゃでろわ。てで、んどせやでしゃ。
So today we looked at, of course, this presentation on impermanence and momentary change, and we looked at how through this reflection on impermanence, our faith will, in the Dharma will become very strong and stable, because it will come about in dependence on our experience of how our suffering decreases and our happiness increases, and thereby through this meditation on impermanence, our faith in the Dharma will become that much more powerful. And likewise, through this meditation on impermanence, we will wholeheartedly and happily engage in the accomplishment of virtue and strengthening our virtuous minds. And we will purify without any difficulty. We will want to eliminate the causes for future suffering. And we will only want to engage in accumulating the causes for future happiness. This is something that will come about to us easily once we've cultivated this mind of understanding impermanence. So I just want to finish by reminding us of some of the things we've spoken about in the past. So here we spoke about how in the morning when we wake up, to try and as the first thing to remember the mind of impermanence, and that we have woken up, and this isn't something that we should take for granted. And likewise, we can't take for granted that we will see this day out. And when we have this clear in our mind, we must then think that, so when my death comes, my death which is certain, and the time of this death that is uncertain, whenever it comes, a future rebirth will follow. And there are only two paths, a continuing happy migration or falling into a suffering migration. So to ensure that we only attain a happy migrations in the future, I need to accumulate virtue, I need to purify non-virtue. And furthermore, if I can be of help to others to ensure that they too only accumulate, that they too have happy rebirths and not suffering rebirths, I need to, at the very least, not be the causes for others to accumulate non-virtue, for others suffering, but be the cause for others to accumulate virtue. So here, when we wake up, we reflect on impermanence, we reflect on our impending death and our need to accumulate virtue. The very least we make this commitment, today I will not harm. And that's really the very least. Moreover, we should commit to engaging in beneficial activities. So we say on one hand, I will not engage in the 10 non-virtuous actions, but whenever I have the opportunity, I will practice generosity, ethical conduct, patience and the like. I will strive to help others whenever I can. And we know that for sure when we go to work, we are going to encounter problems. Work is very much samsara, and our samsaric minds tend to be very dominant there, so it's very much part of samsara. So this is my opportunity to practice patience and be a cause of good in the workplace, a person that brings benefit in my workplace. And so this is my opportunity there, that of whatever difficulties I encounter, that I will practice patience. And likewise with whatever difficulties I have with my home situation, I'll practice patience and I'll be of benefit to others. So thinking this way, we'll want to accumulate virtue, we'll want to engage in accomplishing virtue. Then we need to tie this reflection on impermanence to our reflection on bodhicitta, and this is important to try and do every day, and do this with a powerful mind and a concentrated mind. And if we do this in a sustained manner, even if it's just every morning, just one session a day, even if it's a short period, but you do it in a sustained manner, then a month from now we would have done it 30 times. 2 months from now we would have had 60 meditations on impermanence. So this really is achievable. And as we progress, because this consistency is imperative. Because then, as we think about it again day after day after day, then this mind starts to become very familiar with us, starts to become more of a second nature. And with this habit, this mind becomes very powerful. So here, we've studied now over many weeks, we've looked at impermanence in great detail, and we've only studied this for one reason, that's so that we can apply it. So we really should continue to apply what we have learned in this chapter, and we should apply it in a consistent manner, because the results are really quite incomparable. So this is my request to everyone here. It's advice that I too will follow, because we're really all the same here. We all want happiness. We all want to be free from suffering. So I make this commitment to engage in this meditation. My request is that here, everyone too makes a commitment to engage in meditation too.
Oh yeah, then that's a model. Yeah, no, Koyu Chacha Ningbo. Your mother said in Mahadusine, Tikoshiarisha.
So then next time we'll start to look at the presentation on how psychic existence has no essence. So that brings to an end the presentation on the impermanence of life. So are there some questions tonight? Okay, then thank you very much.
Oh, yeah.